This is a Media Lab podcast. Welcome to Putting It Together, the podcast that goes through the entire body of work of Stephen Sondheim, show by show and song by song. My name is Kyle Marshall, your self-described Sondheim expert. And I do actually mention this in the episode, but I do want to start everything off by telling you how much of a dummy, how much of an idiot I am, where when people start singing songs, I just expect them to be singing the truth. And that isn't always the case when it comes to musical theater. Sometimes you can have a character be singing a song and they're not actually meaning the words that they're speaking. That is very true in the song that we're going to be talking about today, In Buddy's Eyes. And I got to invite on a guest that's been on multiple times, a great guest who always brings so much knowledge and passion into what she's talking about. And that's Christine Chen, who you're going to be hearing in just a few moments. I guess something to just discuss very briefly here in this intro piece is the pretty bad news that Broadway suffered here again this week, where theaters are going to be shut down until at least 2021. So we're going the entire full year here now without any productions happening on Broadway. And my heart goes out to all of those performers, the designers, the directors, the choreographers, the art directors, like everyone who is involved in these productions, not to mention like the actors and costume designers, set designers, theater ushers. All those people that are affected by this are in pretty bad shape right now. All I can say, and it's not much, and I agree with that, but all I can say is that my heart breaks for those people. All I want to do is to be able to go and see a Broadway show. And specifically company, but all the other great stuff that's going on here right now too. I want to be able to see those performers and see that passion and see the unique aspect of live theater, which is seeing it with an audience. And it seems like as we go further and further into our, COVID-19 reality, that is maybe not going to be something that's going to be returning back anytime soon. And that is kind of a drag. I am not the most knowledgeable on this subject, but if anyone knows a great organization that helps out those people, I know that there's the Actors Fund in the United States, but if there is even a more global one, or one that is helping out the theater artists that work at the theaters themselves, please let me know. You can send an email to puttingittogetherpodcast@gmail.com, or you can reach out on any of the social media handles that I have. Talking about support, though, I do want to give a huge thanks to my Patreon supporters out there. Of course, whatever level you choose is, I am so incredibly honored. In particular, because I thank my God That's Good tiers every single week. That's a big thanks to Todd Fuller and to Jack Healy for being the supporters at that tier. But now it's time for Plodding Along. This is the part of the show where I describe to you what is going on in the plot. So if you're watching a version of Follies that has the song The Road You Didn't Take, what is going to go on now is that Sally is telling Ben how her days have been spent with Buddy. So it's kind of the call and response that's been going on. Ben sang The Road You Didn't Take, and now it's Sally's turn to tell him, in Buddy's eyes, what she looks like. Except she's lying. All right, I'm going to go thank some sponsors. And then when I return, it's going to be my conversation with Christine Chen about In Buddy's Eyes. Putting It Together is part of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. This episode of Putting It Together is brought to you by World on Fire, a new podcast from CBC Edmonton. World on Fire is a new 5-part series that takes you to the front lines of our out-of-control wildfires in Canada, Australia, and California. Recorded during the COVID-19 pandemic, hosts Adrian Lamb and Mike Flanagan look at what it takes to find hope in the midst of fear and destruction, and how communities affected by wildfires rebuild. The series examines the high costs that wildfires cause to people's health, homes, and communities. Find World on Fire on the CBC Listen app or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find it online at cbc.ca/worldonfire. This week, Putting It Together is also brought to you by the Alberta Podcast Network. So let's go listen to one of our great shows.
Hello and welcome to That's a Thing, a sometimes belated, already outdated guide to your teens, tweens, and everything under 20. I'm Elizabeth.
And I'm Karen. Every month we have a conversation across the generation gap about media, pop culture, society, the internet, that kind of thing.
Karen is my mom, and she's old. I am her daughter, and I am young. Together we are one human being, here to share with you.
Sometimes we bring in another human being who is Elizabeth's brother, John, to do a deep dive into memes and stuff like that.
Hi.
Thank you, John. We were named the Outstanding Kids and Family Series at the 2020 Canadian Podcast Awards, so we have that going for us.
Yes, and we will brag about it until the day the podcast ends, because I am petty.
You can find That's a Thing in the podcatcher of your choice. That is That's a Thing. ! You can also find us at albertapodcastnetwork.com. Is that everything?
I think that's it.
Thanks, sweetheart.
Bye.
Life is slow, but it seems exciting, 'cause Buddy's there. Gourmet cooking and letter writing, and knowing Buddy's there.
Christine, thank you so much for joining me here again.
Hey, thanks for having me on again.
You know, you've been here before, so I wanted to like jump right into it, which is, when did you first come across Follies?
I've heard it just mentioned a few different times. I think I had a friend that saw the 2012 revival, but she was pretty young at the time, I think either in high school or younger, and she like did not like it at all. So I kind of had that sort of opinion going in, and I didn't realize even how much people were just like Follies fans, like in capital letters.
There is a very good contingent of people who are like obsessed with Follies,
right? And I kind of get it, because I'm not even convinced that I like this show yet, but I definitely went down like the YouTube rabbit hole, and just like people have spliced together old video recordings of the original cast with like a soundboard recording of the original cast also, and all that stuff, which is kind of crazy to see. And it's just changed so much, I think, is what also makes it interesting in kind of like a meta way of looking back at what it used to be and looking at what it's become, I guess.
Yeah, this is definitely one of those Sondheim shows. It's actually, I don't know, I feel that Assassins had a similar thing where it wasn't until a few years after the initial run where like the official version actually became a thing. And I think even worse with Follies, because there's so many songs and so many things that have changed and so many updates, and some that Sondheim likes, some that he doesn't like. So it's this weird show. Yeah, it's hard to grapple with, I think, when you first come up to it.
Yeah, it's a lot to take in, I think. I think it did help that I listened to the songs a bit before watching a version of it, just so it was like, all right, cool, I know kind of where things are happening. And then when you watch it, you're like, okay, now that song makes more sense in this context.
Now that you've had a chance at least to see a version of it, is there any part of the show that you like more than the other? You said before, like, you're not sure if you even like this show necessarily, but is there a section of the show that speaks to you more than the others?
I think I find Phyllis really interesting in her character, and I think she gets sort of flashier songs and flashier moments. The story of Jesse and Lucy I'm kind of obsessed with, just the way that song is like put together. And I know Sondheim is also like, oh, it's the lyricist showing off, but I think he does it really well. So, and then just watching different ways that different performers have done it, and the same with Can I Leave You, that progression of that song. But then with Sally, she, I think, has more to dig into, but she's so opaque that I find it a little bit hard to just figure out what, like, is she actually a little bit insane? Is she just really obsessive? Like, she has a lot of things going on. And it's to the point where I don't know if I'm supposed to like Sally or like if I'm supposed to relate to Sally at all. But I feel like Phyllis stands out to me more because I kind of know what her progression is, but then even in her songs, she can still be really interesting and like uncover more depth and stuff.
Yeah, I feel like we're totally aligned in this, in that I am kind of obsessed with Phyllis, and I wish that there was more for her to do in like the first bit of the show, because she kind of gets a little bit sidelined until she gets brought in, and then has some killer numbers in like the second half of the show, I think, and really comes into her own. And then I think Sally is kind of the more, I guess she is technically, well, they're all leads, I suppose, but I think Sally even more so is going to be considered like the lead and protagonist of the show. And so there's, I guess, more to dig in there. But also, yeah, it's harder to get a grasp of exactly who she is, which I think is why there's been such wildly different takes on that character and vocal performances, is because the actress is going to bring a lot into this role, too.
Yeah, I think so. And the whole Loveland sequence is, I still don't really know how to feel about that. I like it in concept. I don't know if it necessarily works in execution completely. But I think each specific number works pretty well. I just don't know if it all comes together.
When the biggest thing about this show, when you first come into it, if you read up on it at all, it's like, it's, I guess it's kind of like Company. There's no plot. That's what you kind of get told. It's like, there's no plot. And even Sondheim says, there's no plot in this show. And for the first, I would say at least third, I was like, I don't know about this. There seems to be a plot with this. Like, there's these couples reuniting, and I feel like I know where this is going.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're kind of right. Then that Loveland sequence hits, and it's basically, I mean, I understand the purpose of it. It's like everyone's having their own kind of breakdown and realization and character growth and stuff. But it is like this huge, like almost like fantasy sequence that takes up the good last, you know, 40 minutes of this production.
Yeah. And it kind of feels like it comes completely out of nowhere. Like the whole set changes, everything is different. We just completely ignore all the other old Follies girls that were there and performed, and we just forget about them. It's like, oh, they weren't important. They just had a song.
Well, the song that we get to talk about today is In Buddy's Eyes, which is not one of the pastiche numbers that that Sondheim is known for in this show. This is an original creation, I suppose. And it is sung by Sally, which I'm going to give credit where credit is due. So the three productions that I'm mostly looking at here are the original Broadway cast. So that starred Dorothy Collins as Sally. In the 1987 London version, it was Julia McKenzie. And then the 2017 National Theater production, it was Imelda Staunton. Were you a Harry Potter person at all?
Yeah, I know Imelda Staunton for playing Umbridge.
I know. For whatever reason, that's all I can ever really see her as, unfortunately. So
yeah.
It's like, oh, you're evil. I bet you're evil. Like, there's always this thing in the back of my mind.
Yeah, it was really interesting watching this like National Theater production of Follies, because it was like, and she plays Sally very like, unassuming, I guess, like a very almost ditzy. And I'm like, that seems weird to me. I think it's just because I'm so used to seeing her being evil.
Yeah, I know. I think that's, yeah, my own bias that I have coming into this show. But there's always that little underline, like, oh, I think that she's up to something. Which she kind of is, actually, in this show. She has an ulterior motive to coming back to the Follies. I want to have a conversation about that specifically. And maybe just, I want to throw to maybe what your interpretation is after having listened to a few versions of this song and seeing a production. Where do you think Sally's headspace actually is at this point in the show?
So I think she knows that she's pretty unhappy with Buddy, and she knows that their relationship is pretty one direction at this point. I don't know if she necessarily thinks that if she's still in love with Ben, or if she thinks that like she never really loved Buddy. Like, well, so I think for sure she is unhappy with Buddy and is trying to come to the Follies to basically re-accomplish a sense of like the happiness that she had before, whether or not that has to do with seeing Ben again and like relieving those memories. I'm not sure if she was completely like expecting to do that, like if she expected her happiness to be tied to her being with Ben. And so I can see in some ways, some like when she starts seeing In Buddy's Eyes, through the progression of her song, she's obviously like faking the beginning where she's like, oh yeah, everything's great. And look at all these things he does for me. But I think in some versions you can see at the middle, she kind of like breaks down a little and realizes how truly unhappy she is and sort of sees Ben as like the person that can bring her out of this, and sees him as like maybe the reason that she's unhappy is because she didn't marry him instead of Buddy. And then I think in other versions, she already knows that she's still in love with Ben when she starts singing in Buddy's eyes. And so then there's a little more like fake confidence when she starts singing it, because she's like trying to be like, oh, I'm so happy, like I am doing just fine without you. But like secretly she knows that that's putting up a false front. So I could see it going either way, depending on the performer. But I think that middle section when she, there's like a instrumental interlude and you see that scene from when they were younger, she just becomes much more sadder after that.
Yeah, like I agree in that every performer and you know, director are probably gonna have their own interpretations of what they want this song to sound like and look like and how it wants to be progressed through. I can only throw my own interpretation into this, which is I feel that Sally is, because you even hear Buddy talk about that he hasn't seen his wife for a while. She came before him or something like that to New York. So they're almost like meeting up again here at the Follies reunion. I feel that she is coming to confront Ben to see if there is any way to see if there's a relationship that they can have this many years later. And I mean, this is a recurring thing, right? Like you feel sometimes you get stuck into this rut and now you're in your, say, your 50s. And it's like, yeah, we have kids and we have this life together. But isn't there more to this? It wasn't there supposed to be more than this. And I think it's easy for her to look at Ben, who's like super successful and like, well, you have it all put together. This is why I find it so fascinating, these two characters coming, being thrust together. And it's intentional by the creators, I know. But but Sally is like feeling stifled and like you have it made, whereas I think Ben is like, you have it made because you don't need this validation from other people. That's what he feels, I think, at least. Like, I only need validation from other people and I have no validation for myself. I'm just this actor walking through life. I don't know, even know who I am anymore. So they're kind of butting heads and both putting up this facade of themselves, and we're slowly seeing both of those facades crumble throughout this like opening half of the show.
Right. Yeah.
This is why I'm a big dummy, because, and I told you this before we started recording, but I mean, the few times I've listened to this score before, I just innately believe people when they start singing. So I guess that's how you can hoodwink me. If you just start singing at me, I'll just believe what you're saying, because I always thought that she was being truthful in this section where it's like, yeah, she actually really loves her husband and like she like sees herself in him and like understands where that love comes from. But she is kind of lying throughout this entire song. Like Sondheim actually writes right before this song comes up, is like, a little later, it is Sally's turn to lie. Like that's how he like opens up this song. And so I think that's an interesting take, like, and definitely a performer would be able to make that land a little bit more. I can only speak for myself, but when you only hear the vocal performance, I don't know if it's necessarily obvious that is what is going on here. Except like to your point, if someone like in the middle, they have like that little breakdown and really shows like, maybe this is not all it seems to be.
Yeah. And I think part of it is also, it's more noticeable in Imelda Staunton's version because she sort of emotes through the performance more, but
yeah,
the other two versions, and I don't know if that's how they played it on stage or if that's just because they were in a recording booth, so they wanted, like, I guess, a more listenable track, and they just don't seem to have as much of that built into the recording itself. Yeah, like, if you were to just look at the lyrics and not listen to the song, you wouldn't really think that anything's wrong. It's like, oh, well, she has a great life.
Yeah, I know. It's like, seems all great and everything. What's your problem?
Yeah.
Well, let's get into this here. This is how In Buddy's Eyes starts. So Sally sings, life is slow, but it seems exciting because Buddy's there. Gourmet cooking and letter writing and knowing Buddy's there. Every morning, don't faint, I tend the flowers. Can you believe it? Every weekend, I paint for umpteen hours. And yes, I miss a lot, living like a shut-in. No, I haven't got cooks and cars and diamonds. Yes, my clothes are not Paris fashions, but in Buddy's eyes, I'm young, I'm beautiful. In Buddy's eyes, I don't get older.
Life is slow, but it seems exciting, 'cause Buddy's there. Gourmet cooking and letter writing, and knowing Buddy's there. Every morning, don't faint, I tend the flowers. Can you believe it? Every weekend, I paint for umpteen hours. And yes, it does seem small. Yes, I do feel short in Noah's shopping mall. Isn't Bloomingdale's? And yes, it's not at all like what this was bought in nobody's eyes. I'm young, I'm beautiful in body's eyes. I don't get older.
So I want to just stop there for a moment. Anything that you take away from like that opening section at all?
So what I thought could also be what she's doing here is almost like overcompensating, because she knows everything that Ben is doing, and he has this very public life, and like she mentions to Phyllis, oh, you seem like a queen, you seem like Jackie Kennedy. And so I think she's maybe worried that Ben is gonna look down on her for not being as famous or as driven or as or like married to someone similar to him. And she's like, okay, like this, maybe my life is slow. Maybe I don't have, but look at what I do have. And she's just trying really hard to pretend that she is still living like a great life and that that's all she needs.
Yeah, I think that the overriding feeling here too is I think she's embarrassed about her life, right?
Yeah.
Like she's from Phoenix and she's like, quote unquote, only a housewife. But I think that she doesn't want to necessarily admit that they're that she wants to have something else that's there, and is trying to make it sound a little bit better than maybe even what her reality is. I've always liked this, and I've said this so many times, I know, on this show, but it still gets me every time when I really notice it. This is a great example of Sondheim writing lyrics that you could just state these and it would feel like you're just speaking them, and yet there is a rhyme scheme, there's a melody that's even playing with them, but you could act this without ever there being music or anything involved at all. I just find that really interesting that you can write lyrics like that.
Yeah, it's so naturalistic, even though she kind of lists things, but even in this song especially she has those interjections like every morning, don't faint, I tend the flowers, can you believe it? And she's making something so pedestrian seem like, oh yeah, this isn't what I wanted to be, or like this isn't who I wanted to be seen as, but this is what I'm doing and I'm enjoying it. But that part obviously is a bit of a lie.
And I mean, I think even cooler than that, like that don't faint, which is an aside, right? It's like, and don't faint rhymes with paint later on.
Yeah.
So I mean, it actually comes back into play there. I also think it's interesting, I mean, whether they do or don't, I think it's interesting that the kind of, she throws at them what she kind of believes their lives are like, right? Cooks and cars and diamonds. Yes, my clothes may not be Paris fashions. Like, I'm sure you can even see, like, Phyllis is well put together. She dresses nicely, that sort of thing. But I mean, I'm sure there's more to it than that. It's all about these outward appearances, I think, that she's focused on rather than, like, the people themselves.
Yeah. And I want to point out that one line where she's like, I miss a lot living like a shut-in. So I'm wondering, like, is she jealous because, is she calling herself a shut-in because she doesn't travel around like even like Buddy does as a salesman, or as Ben and Phyllis do as like politicians? Is she just calling herself a shut-in to put herself down, or is she actually sort of resentful of how she's living and how she doesn't get to really go out and do anything because her husband's always gone, her kids are gone. She just like has nothing to do but stay home, really. And she doesn't mention none of them really mention any other friends that they have at this point.
This is subtext now, but I think becomes text later on, which is, I don't even think it's necessarily that there are people, let me rephrase this. I think it's pretty plain by the end of the show that she's pushed a lot of people away. Yeah. Now, whether that's her fault completely, I don't know. They don't really get into that, but it's like, it sounds like her kids don't really want to be in her life, or they've moved away and don't really want to come back. Buddy is, of course, like cheating on her and stuff like that, as we mm-hmm. find out. And I don't think there's any necessarily a reason that she has to be a shut-in. She could go out and do stuff. I think she's choosing not to, because she's convinced herself that, I don't know, it's easier maybe to stay at home.
I also wonder if it's one of the things where she sees people as like, you have to be that perfect couple. Like, you don't want to see them
right.
separate. If she goes out, she wants to be with her husband and have this image of, oh, we're always together. And maybe that could be why she doesn't leave, because her husband's never there and she doesn't have someone to sort of depend on like she maybe wanted when she was younger.
Actually, that's a pretty smart thing. I think, you know, they talk about like love languages and stuff like that, you know,
yeah.
and psychology and stuff like that. But to me, it does seem like Sally is one of those people who prioritizes things, right? Like, giving things is how like love is shown. So she wants to show off stuff like, this is my husband, this is the clothes we're wearing, this is the stuff that we have, these are the cars that we drive. It's all that kind of stuff that is also tied into like feeling worthy and like prestige and worth and all that kind of stuff. But I feel like that's all wrapped up into her character.
Yeah. And I do also wonder if, when she mentions all the like cooks and cars and diamonds and things that she assumes Ben has, if she's also a bit resentful because if Ben had married her, like, she would also have those things. And instead, she's mm-hmm. just tending the flowers and isn't that person.
We're going to come back to this too, but this is the first instance here at the end of this, the stanzas that I read, where she mentions about getting older, and she says, in Buddy's eyes, I don't get older. And definitely in this section, at least, I guess you could see that in the positive way, but the way that I read this is that I think what is partly causing her frustration is that Buddy does constantly see her as like an 18-year-old girl, as a 20-year-old woman, mm-hmm. that sort of thing, right? So he kind of infantilizes her a little bit, where he always treats her like a princess and stuff, when it's like, no, like I'm a grown woman. You don't need to do that to me.
Yeah. And I wonder if she, if that also caused her to sort of like backslide into wanting to be that 18-year-old girl who was in love with Ben. Like, if he always treated her like if he kept mentioning the past, and you can kind of see in the book scenes, Buddy and Sally are the ones that keep bringing up the past, whereas Ben and Phyllis seem to want to move on. But if Buddy
Correct,
keeps
yeah.
bringing that up and she keeps thinking about it, she probably can't really get over Ben, because she would keep thinking about him and think about when they were together.
Yeah, I think that is really the biggest thing that separates the two couples, right? Is like, Sally is so stuck in the past, and it's like, Phyllis is like, no, like, it's the future. I don't care about the past. I don't
yeah.
think about these times that much. It's time to move on. So it's like this, those two different worldviews that get conflicted throughout the show.
Yeah.
So then there's this, like, I like this little mini section here, because it's very like staccato. As she goes, so life is ducky and times go flying, and I'm so lucky, I feel like crying. And in Buddy's eyes, I'm young, I'm beautiful. In Buddy's eyes, I can't get older. I'm still the princess, still the prize.
In Buddy's eyes, I don't get older. So life is ducky and time goes flying, and I'm so lucky I feel like crying. And in Buddy's eyes, I'm young, I'm beautiful. In Buddy's eyes, can't get older. I'm still the princess, still the prize. In Buddy's eyes,
I want to talk about this for a moment, which is, well, first off, I just like the fact that he says he uses the word ducky in, yeah. In these lyrics, only because it's something that I use in everyday language, and that's because I was born in 1920, apparently. But I've always enjoyed that. But I think this is where the actress can really lean into it, right? Especially in that line, like, I feel like crying. Like, you can mm-hmm. very much emote at that point, and that can be where that kind of breakdown starts to happen.
Yeah, and I think that this sort of breakdown also leads to her, I don't know if you'd call it a breakdown, but in losing my mind. And mm-hmm. she starts to sort of second guess her choices and what she really perceived as being true and what her life used to be. But and I think that also this section is sort of like a reprise of the first section that we just talked about. But yeah, I think like when she's using ducky and I'm so lucky, because it's so staccato, it's kind of like she's really trying to drive this point home and like convince herself of it. But then you get that I feel like crying, and it's, well, maybe she actually does feel like crying, but just not for the reason she's saying.
Exactly. Like, there's all this subtext going on. It's like she does feel like crying, but not for what she's actually saying here right now. She feels like crying because of all the other stuff she's not saying. So basically, this song is like jazz. It's all the notes that they're not playing. It's what, yeah. what's important. And this is also, of course, kind of the second time, right? It's like, in Buddy's eyes, I can't get older. So it's different than don't. And this is just the English major in me. Like, I'm very interested when phrases get reused again, but there's like a single word changed, because there is a difference, slight as it may be, between don't and can't, right?
Yeah.
Don't signifying like, I always see you the way that you were, the way we first met. And in can't is like, you have no agency in this. Like, you will not, like, you can't physically get older here in this case. This is my own interpretation that I'm throwing into this. I don't think this actually has anything to do with age she's actually talking about. I think it's about maturity. I think that's really what she's kind of speaking to here.
Yeah, I would agree with that mostly, I think. And I think it also plays into right after So Life is Ducky, she says, and time goes flying, but I can't get older, mm-hmm. is what she's saying. And it always seems to me in all the versions of this that when she's saying I can't get older, she sounds very frustrated, almost like she's like, I yeah. want to get older, and like, I don't want to be reminded of like how much I regret the mistakes in my youth. And we find out later that she blames the younger version of herself for basically like losing out on Ben. And yeah. if she gets older, that implies that maybe she can learn from those mistakes and move on. But if she can't get older, then Buddy will always see her as she was then, and it sort of traps her, I guess.
I think that's a good point too, and definitely with the ghosts of their younger selves kind of floating around the stage, sometimes coming very physically into the scene, or sometimes just staying in the background. I mean, that's always a presence that's there, especially in that 2017 National Theater version. Like, they almost stay on stage the entire time, not necessarily like right beside the actors, but they're always around somewhere in the staging. So it's like impossible not to, it's impossible to forget about them. Before we get too far, I even had it in my notes and we blew past it, but I just want to double back just a second, back to those things they were saying in the first section I read out, which was like, no, I haven't got cooks and cars and diamonds. Yes, my clothes are not Paris fashions. That is not what they sing in the 1987 version. In the 1987 version, they sing something completely different. They say, Sally sings, and yes, it does seem small. Yes, I do feel shut in. No, a shopping mall isn't Bloomingdale's. And yes, it's not at all like what this was. And even Sondheim says he has no idea why he changed those lyrics at the time. So your guess is as good as mine. But do you have any strong feelings of like positive or negative about those new lyrics that only happened in 1987?
Well, like when I was talking about shut in, because the original lyric mm-hmm. is living like a shut-in, and here it's I don't right. feel like a shut-in, which I think it does give a different meaning as to how she actually is living versus how she perceives her life. So right. that's also a slight modification there. But I think the shopping mall Bloomingdale's line is also interesting. Like, I don't know why necessarily that he would change it, except maybe like Bloomingdale's was more the height of fashion then, because it was a few years yeah. after Broadway. But yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, it's a weird change. I agree with that one thing. Saying, yes, I do feel shut in is actually very different than saying I am a shut in. So it gives a kind of a different flavor to that. I'm not actually a big fan of the no, a shopping mall isn't Bloomingdale's, even though I understand like the what she's referencing here.
Yeah.
But I just like the original lyrics better. Have you ever been to a Bloomingdale's?
I have.
Okay, cool. What's it like? I've literally never stepped foot in Bloomingdale's before. I don't even know if they're still around, to be honest.
It's like a maybe on this scale of like Nordstrom. Like, I don't even think it's okay. That high scale. I don't, it possibly used to be. It might be a slightly classier than a Nordstrom, but I wouldn't consider it as high class. One of the things I did write down about that, though, which I just found, was when Buddy talks about Margie, his other girlfriend on the road, she works at Neiman's, which is also Neiman Marcus, a high scale department store. So I don't know if that was meant to be related, like she sees this more glamorous life and he is with this other girl who maybe she doesn't shop at this high scale department store, but she is closer to it, I guess.
Yeah, I think there's something there. I think she just feels so shut off by not having that like super glamorous lifestyle that any type of outward appearance of like high fashion or something is like, I don't know, this huge affront. She feels really bad that she can't do all this stuff that she assumes everybody else is doing.
Yeah. But then that last line that was changed, I don't have it exactly, but it was something about the way that it was.
Yeah. And yes, it's not at all like what this was.
Right. And so I think that's still kind of this idea of she is overcompensating for her life, and she thinks that when Ben loved her when she was younger, she must have been, you know, more glamorous, or something must have made Ben love her then that isn't here now. And so she's like, well, I wasn't like I was then, but I'm still me, and like hoping that he would still come back to her, essentially.
Yeah, there's I think so much wrapped up into this song. so much stuff that is so integral to like the Sally character to like really be, it's a fine line, right? Like, cause I feel like you could really sing this song almost like super frantic and upset and angry and like trying to only like bubbling your emotions solely out. And I think there's a much more subdued way that you could perform this as well. I don't know if there's necessarily a right or wrong way to do it, but it's an interesting thing that you can be so different in your performances within this one, just based on like not very complicated lyrics necessarily.
Yeah. And I think the music itself plays into that, because if you were to read the lyrics, you would think that it's like a happy song, and you would maybe expect the music to be more upbeat or more larger, but it stays very simple when she's singing the verse. And then when she does talk about like, oh, in Buddy's eyes, I'm young and beautiful, it does get more of that sort of like grand sweeping feeling, but it's still, it's almost too much compared to the simplicity of the rest of the song. So it's like she's lying to herself again.
Well, here's how it finishes. She says, in Buddy's eyes, I'm young, I'm beautiful. In Buddy's arms, on Buddy's shoulder, I won't get older. Nothing dies. And all I ever dreamed I'd be, the best I ever thought of me, and every minute there to see, in Buddy's eyes.
In Buddy's eyes, I'm young, I'm beautiful. In Buddy's arms, on Buddy's shoulder, I won't get older. Nothing dies. And all I ever dreamed I'd be, the best I ever thought of me, is every minute there to see.
I think that's some beautiful lyric poetry that ends this off here. I think this is what goes into what we even started this conversation with, which is sometimes hard to like get a wrangle on exactly where her headspace is, because this feels like so emotional at the end. And yet, this is what I'm going to pitch to you. This is what I wrote down in my own notes. So tell me if you think I'm right or wrong, which is I'm wondering if we are to interpret this as, like, in Buddy's eyes, that's what even the song is called, is that that is like a literal thing she's saying, which is like literally in Buddy's eyes, like, I seem young and beautiful and all this stuff. I'm the prize, all the other stuff that she said here so far, but like not in his mind, not in his heart, not in his soul. Like there's no connection with this anymore. It's just the way he perceives me is this thing,
right?
That he got, that he won, that he like won over Ben and stuff like that. But then nothing has really progressed between us the last however many years we've been together. I don't know. I don't know what you think about that.
I think that would make a lot of sense, especially when she's saying on Buddy's shoulder, I won't get older, like in Buddy's eyes, like just the way that he treats her, maybe also physically, is still as if she is very young. And he does, whenever he talks to her, he always calls her kid, which is a pet name that like adults use, but it is still a little bit like infantilizing. And I think that she just doesn't see her, like he maybe doesn't see her as who she's become necessarily.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, how do you personally interpret though, like the very last bit here? Do you think those are like fully, like are those full complete thoughts? Like all I ever dreamed I'd be, the best I ever thought of me, and every minute there to see in Buddy's eyes. It almost sounds like sentence fragments to me, but I don't know how you read that.
Yeah, it's not a complete thought, but even if we go back to that, when you mentioned don't and can't, and now she's using won't, I think when she's saying can't, and I mentioned how I think she's getting frustrated at that, like maybe, and this is also my interpretation of Sally's headspace, is she realizes she let too much of that frustration show. And so she's like, oh, but I won't get older as long as I'm with Buddy. And she's sort of trying to cover up that misstep. And so that's why she's also like, oh, look at all this great, like the best that I ever thought of me, all that I ever dreamed to be. And so she's trying to sort of like cover that up with all these other good things, which is why she can't really form a full sentence, is because she's too busy scrambling to cover that up.
Right. cover her tracks, so to speak.
Yeah.
So what do you think, like overall, like what is your impression of this song, either individually or as a whole in this entire show?
It really is interesting how much an actor can do with this. Like, I think I actually thought this when I was like first listened to it and sort of understood what it was. Like, I think it would be a really good audition song for any person who is going in for, like, you know, any role that's somewhat similar, I guess. But the other thing I noticed about Follies in general was how much sort of parallelism there is across just all the combinations of the four main characters. Like, this song and Could I Leave You is, in both of them, Phyllis and Sally kind of move through a different series of revelations that they may not have known at the beginning of the song. And even though they're talking about different things and they're in very different points of their relationships, I do see them as somewhat similar and fulfilling kind of a similar purpose, in that they just are overcome with this amount of regret and sort of that what if question.
Yeah, that's true. I think that there is even literally a song that comes later on that actually, it's right after this, if I'm not mistaken, where they use mirrors and stuff like that. And I think that there's a lot of like mirroring that actually happens in this show. I think that's why there is two couples, and that's why they both have like ghosts like trailing them around. Like, there's all this stuff that's kind of interconnected here throughout the show.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite recording at all?
So when I first listened to the original Broadway one, I thought it was, I didn't realize how, I guess a lot of people were angry about it because a lot of songs and bits of songs were cut.
Yeah.
And I still was able to enjoy it because I didn't realize, I guess, how much was cut. And I do like listening to that. And I do also like listening to the 2017 version, just because it's a little more complete. And I think the actors do significantly different choices than the Broadway one. I'm not that into the London one, though. Like, I don't think the new songs are super interesting, and it doesn't seem very vibrant.
Yeah, I'm again right there with you in that weirdly, like as I've stated on this show, by and large, I'm usually a bigger fan of the original Broadway cast. They did Follies a big disservice, though, in this original Broadway cast, according, which Sondheim himself has said multiple times how much he dislikes the original Broadway cast because they cut things randomly, didn't include certain songs, just because they would not let him have a double LP recording of it. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually a really big fan of that 2017 version. I just think that they recorded it like really nicely. The mix is good. It sounds so lush and everything. It's a great, great recording. And then someone just told me about this morning in a different recording I had. About this
the soundboard recording or
it might be, but it's like it was like a concert version or something. They brought back Donna McKechnie from Company. And it's like this all-star production. Anyways, it's supposed to be like the definitive version of it because Sondheim like executive produced it and
I've heard mixed reviews about that one because basically they created that because they were missing so much on this original recording. And I think it has like Manny Patinkin as Ben, I want to say. And Elaine Page or someone. But I've heard pretty mixed opinions on that one because I think some of the acting choices people just don't agree with. Right. And there's also like a Paper Mill 1998 recording, I think, which is also somewhat different. And I couldn't find that on streaming, but I know it exists as a CD, I think. But the one that
it's somewhere out there.
Yeah, the one that I was really trying to look for was apparently in the original cast, they used to do these like soundboard recordings, and they're pretty much bootlegs. But they would just like record what was going into the soundboard, and like rumor on the street is that Sondheim himself wanted it because he was scared they wouldn't make a cast recording of it.
So
they have a few different ones. A few of these, I think, like there's supposed to be one from the Boston tryout, which I would love to see or hear.
Oh, yeah.
And then like an opening night one, and it has the full show dialogue and everything. And just based on the internet, it seems like it was floating around a lot a while ago, but I could not find it now anymore. So I don't know what happened to it.
I don't know how controversial of an opinion this is, but I'm just going to throw it out there. In like our online world now and with streaming and the way that it all works, I actually. So shocked that those things aren't just like a moneymaker for productions in that like I get like they go for like the really great recording usually like a few weeks before the show opens so they have it to like sell to the people who just you know, went and saw whatever the new show is but it's like I would pay literally I would pay full money for it like what you just said like start to finish all the dialogue like the audience like reactions to it straight from the soundboard. Like I would love to listen to some of those recordings just to get like a feel for the show and how it flows and stuff like that.
But. And people were saying like, why don't they just like clean this up a little, like just remaster it. They could put it out as a new album and people would definitely buy it.
Yeah. Get on it. Come on, Sondheim. So one last thing I wanted to end off here with was the fact that in the book Finishing the Hat that Sondheim wrote with all his lyrics in it is he mentions that originally this song was actually called In Someone's Eyes and it had virtually the same lyrics. But then what happened is that at the end of what we just heard, Ben would actually reply backwards. And here's just some of what he would have said. Ben was supposed to say, what was I to you? What were you to me? Does it matter now we're older? I don't remember you a princess. Tell me, was I handsome? Were you pretty then? Were there songs we sang? And it kind of goes on like that where he asks her about things because he doesn't truly remember the past or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm just throwing this at you right now, but do you think that this song works better with it just being Sally? Or do you think you would want to hear like the response from Ben?
As a standalone, the response from Ben would be interesting just to see how that plays against the song. But I think in the overall scheme of the show, I think Sondheim crafts all these solos specifically. Like each person has basically one major solo in the beginning and then one major solo during the Loveland sequence. And so I think it would kind of disrupt that flow also.
Yeah.
I guess in those lines, Ben doesn't really say anything that we don't already know about him. Like, we know that he's sort of chasing this. Well, he doesn't want to think about the past, but once he does, he's sort of chasing this past of like, oh, was I handsome then? Like, I was, you know, I could have had it all, but now I threw it away.
what I actually find the most interesting from that passage is how the song used to be called In Someone's Eyes. And I'm wondering if that, like, every instance of Buddy was actually someone. I'm assuming that's what the case was. But that does slightly change the meaning of the song, I think, when it goes from something general like that, In Someone's Eyes, versus when it's, like, super specific, In Buddy's Eyes, this is what it is. Me personally, I actually do think I like the change into something very specific, because it gives it, I don't know, a little bit more meaning than just saying a random someone.
Well, my assumption would be that if she's singing In Someone's Eyes, she's thinking about younger Ben. And she's sort of reminiscing more then. And here it seems more defensive. Oh, in Buddy's eyes, like, I married him, I must be happy. And instead of being like, oh, and someone, like, maybe if she said someone, like, Ben would judge her for being unhappy in her marriage and things like that.
Thank you so much for joining me here, Christine. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
How could people find you online if they're interested to see what else you do?
So my personal Twitter is Across the Arch. And then I also host a podcast about, well, it used to be about current Broadway shows, but now we know that's not happening. So we're sort of just filling out the backlog of this new season, because we generally talk about new musicals for each season on Broadway. And we finally did our first revival with West Side Story. We're actually also, we spent like 4 hours recording Company. We could have spent a lot longer than that, but that's also going to be, that'll be out by the time that this episode comes out. I'm actually going to write the show notes for it after this and put it up.
Oh, yeah, but, for sure. This will mean nothing to the people that are listening to this, probably, just based on how time works. But I literally finished listening to your West Side Story episodes like an hour ago while I was doing a quick meal break. I'm also 2 weeks behind in all my podcasts.
Oh, yeah. I have a huge backlog just now that I don't have a commute anymore. So I'm trying to figure out what to do with those. But yeah, it's terrible. But so we have Companies coming in two parts, because we just spent so much time on it. We didn't even get to like talking about actors because we were just we had so much to say about everything that was going on. And that podcast is Bottomless Broadway. So you can follow us, Bottomless B-Way, on Twitter and Instagram, and give us a listen if you're interested.
Cool. Look forward to it. Thank you once again.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. You can send emails to puttingittogetherpodcast@gmail.com. And you can also follow Sondheim Podcast on Twitter and on Instagram. And if you can or want to support this show monetarily, you can do that by going to patreon.com/puttingittogetherpodcast. Thank you to the Alberta Podcast Network and to World on Fire this week. Putting It Together is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and pretty much anywhere you can get podcasts from. Consider subscribing so that you never miss an episode. Next week, we'll be talking about Who's That Woman? I'll just be looking into a mirror. As always, a big thanks to the great Chris Taniguchi, who designed the podcast artwork, and to Nick Driscoll for composing our theme music. Well, we've reached the end of our episode. Yes, I know. Goodbye for now. I'm only going to talk about a cut song if it actually appeared in a version of the show at some point. That's going to be my rule going forward. So I mentioned Can That Boy Foxtrot in the I'm Still Here episode, or I'm going to. Otherwise, it's just going to be these are the songs. Otherwise, I'm going to be talking about Follies for like the next 3 years about all these songs that he wrote.
Maybe quarantine will be over by then.